All right, we're going to call the meeting to order at 1 o'clock. Call the Property Tax and Local Sales Tax Division to order. And we don't have a quorum yet, so we're not going to approve any minutes. But our first house file is House File 393. Representative Johnson, if you would come forward and present your bill. And Representative Conan is going to move that House File 393 be laid over and for possible inclusion into the division report. So with that, Representative Johnson, Representative Mariani carried this bill last year, if I'm not correct, or one very identical to it.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. They figured they'd pick up the pace this year a little bit.
Very good. So kind of sending them the 18 this year to finish things up. All right. So Representative Johnson, good to have you here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, committee. The purpose of House File 393, which is before you, is to reattach Holman Field and that St. Paul's downtown airport to the city and school district's tax base, as well as have businesses at Holman Field contribute to the fiscal disparities pool and state general taxes. These businesses at Holman Field have enjoyed property tax exemption since 1996, whereby they pay no property taxes to the city, St. Paul School District, fiscal disparities, or state general taxes. And for 2009, those exemptions added up to around $676,000. Now, the main reason for this bill, quite frankly, is tax fairness. Tax fairness. Currently, the businesses make yearly payments to the city of police and fire, and in the year 2007, that amounts around $63,000, which, of course, is far short of their property tax responsibilities. So you compare the $676,000 with $63,000, you see the difference. So, in short, Mr. Chair and committee, especially given our current severe budget woes and as a matter of fairness and equity, it's time to end this preferential treatment and include these businesses as equal partners in supporting our city, school district, and state. This should not be seen as a punitive measure by any means, but more again as a matter of fairness. And I will add, Mr. Chair, that I read through extensive minutes of the city council meeting for the city of St. Paul when this matter was first presented back in 1995. And although the city supported this detachment by resolution in 95, they also included a sunset date of December 31st, 1998, which I think clearly presumes that this was a time-limited exemption. So that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair. I have with me, should any questions arise, Mr. Tom Diamond. He's a citizen activist who's pursued and followed this important issue.
Thank you very much, Representative. Did Mr. Diamond, did you have some testimony? Just answer questions. I guess. Okay, one question I would have for Representative Johnson is, since 1996, what has changed? I mean, you know, initially this was set up in 1996. What has changed that would say, hey, we should do away with this from 96?
I think the origin of, and clearly what it states in the information that was provided to the City Council at the time was to spur economic development, greater use of Holman Field, and to have the same tax liability as Minneapolis St. Paul Airport to provide an economic advantage for the city, for the Holman Field businesses. I mean, I would argue that Holman Field during that time frame has enjoyed the benefits of this exemption, and enough time has expired between now and then to say that the time for the exemption has expired, that they've enjoyed the benefits of that exemption over this time frame. And that, again, as I referred to earlier, the whole notion of this exemption had a time limit initially from the city anyway, so it fits with what the intent was.
All right, do you have anyone else here with you, Representative Johnson?
I do not.
Okay. Is there anyone here from the City of St. Paul or the St. Paul School District that would care to testify for or against or anything? We heard numbers here that what they're paying in lieu of increase from that, about $63,000, and the actual property taxes would be about $676,000.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So anyone from... All right, so if Mr. Diamond, if you would step down and...
Hi, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Wendy Underwood with the City of St. Paul. And I just want to let members know the city currently does not have a position on this bill. It has been discussed before the City Council's Legislative Ad Hoc Committee and was passed without recommendation. A formal resolution in support of Representative Johnson's bill is on the City Council agenda but has not been passed. The mayor is on record saying that the timing of removal of this exemption is very poor for our businesses, and the city itself does face a cash loss if this law were to pass. We currently receive a payment in lieu of tax from the tenants at Home and Field for police and fire services. It's proportional to our overall property tax. In 2009, the tenants are to pay the city their payment in lieu of tax of just over $72,000. And so we're very concerned about losing that direct cash payment to the city during this economic time. So, and all of that, questions about that are being discussed at City Hall.
See, Ms. Underwood, when you talk about the City of St. Paul actually losing, okay, if in lieu of the $72,000, what would that be bringing in property taxes? I mean, it sounds like that was much higher than that, so I guess I...
The property tax estimate, and if you and I have the same most recent chart, would be just under $100,000 to the city for 2009. Our concern is that we currently receive a cash payment from the tenants for their pilot payment, and by that $100,000 roughly going on the city levy, mm-hmm. For us to recapture that, if you will, as cash, we would have to raise the levy. So, and we're concerned about the direct impact to our current 2009 budget, which is short and likely going to be even greater problem by the summer.
Ms. Underwood, I'm not quite following on the property tax. If the property taxes would bring in, you know, at the same rate you're currently levying in the city, would bring in, you know, roughly $100,000, I still don't see $100,000 versus $72,000. Looks like you still get more in property taxes than what you're getting in lieu of taxes. Explain that a little further. I'm losing you somewhere there.
Well, and Mr. Chair, right, and I may be doing a poor job explaining it. But the concern we have is that by the additional $100,000 going on the property tax levy, which is a benefit to our residents of about a dollar as far as what they pay in property tax, it's very nominal as opposed to the cash the city directly receives from the tenants.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you would actually, Senator, would be spreading out $100,000 that people would pay less. But I still see the residents would save a little bit, potentially. But anyway, any other comments or questions?
Yes.
I'm hearing from Ms. Dalton that the levy limits would play into some of this, where you could not levy extra, at least for it. So that would make a difference there. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly understand Representative Johnson bringing this forward on behalf of his constituents. We heard this in committee before last year, and you know, my feeling is that unless we've got a clear position of the city, either for or against this, I find it very difficult for us as a state to kind of get in the middle of what I think should be a local issue. And as I understand, Ms. Underwood, this is on the agenda for the city to give further consideration. And Mr. Chairman, I don't think we should weigh in on this until such time as we have a clear indication from the city as to what their position is.
Thank you.
Anyone, Representative Johnson, did you want to respond to anything so far? Otherwise, I'm going to ask, thank you, Ms. Underwood, very much. And is there here anyone else that would care to testify for or against House File 393? Please come forward. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Clint Coomer. I'm the general manager for Signature Flight Support at the St. Paul Downtown Airport. Our company coordinates and provides various ground support services to business and general aviation aircraft that are based in St. Paul or that fly in from around the country to do business in our city. In addition, our company provides services 24 hours a day for military, medical, and emergency response aircraft. I'm speaking today on behalf of the tenants and employees of the St. Paul Downtown Airport to voice our concern over the potential legislation changing the tax status for the businesses at our airport. As you know, Senator Pappas and Representative Mariani originally authored the bill that provided us the tax exemption in 1996 with support of the mayor, school district, and the Port Authority. At the time, the St. Paul Airport was underutilized and struggling, and it was imperative to try and make it an economically viable enterprise that would create jobs, promote growth in the community, and relieve some of the congestion problems that face the international airport. The intent of the tax relief was to level the playing field with the international airport, as they were already and continue to be detached from city and school district taxes, which created a competitive advantage for them when trying to attract business to our airport. In exchange for the exemption, the St. Paul tenants agreed to make annual payments to the city for police and fire protection, as already mentioned, increase the total market value of the airport by at least 20% within 5 years, and work with local students to provide mentoring and promote careers in aviation. The Act contained a blink-off provision whereby the exemption would expire in 5 years if the tenants did not reach the agreed-upon 20% market value outlined in the Legislative Act. 13 years later, the 1996 legislation has been and continues to be a resounding success. Currently, there are over 300 people employed at the airport. The local areas enjoyed a substantial impact on business activities, including car rental companies, local restaurants, taxi limo services, and hotels. People utilizing the airport provide a boost to the local economy. It's estimated that the economic benefit of the airport to the surrounding community has grown to over $112 million annually. That's based on a 2005 study. In regards to the total market value of the airport property, we experienced a 200% increase in value as of 2001, and a total increase of $21 million in value since 1996. The investment home and field tenants have made has caused the market value to far exceed the objective of the original agreement. The tenants in St. Paul have also clearly met the commitments to promote education and mentoring. Over the years, Signature has formed a partnership with Farnsworth Aerospace, an aviation-focused elementary school on St. Paul's east side. We provide tours, donate money, books, and pilot supplies. Farnsworth has been so successful that they've expanded their program recently. In addition, we've donated computer equipment to Concordia Creative Learning Academy, and I've recently volunteered to serve on the Aviation Programs Advisory Board at Embry-Riddle Community College. We've also been involved in Aviation Career Education Camp, a joint venture with the FAA, MnDOT, and several local aviation companies to provide week-long summer camps for high school students to introduce them to various aviation-related careers, science, math, and technology. In addition, we work with St. Paul Connections and the public schools to ensure that economically disadvantaged students are allowed the opportunity to participate at a reduced rate or, in many cases, free of charge due to donations made by the St. Paul tenants. We have, of course, kept our commitment to pay annually for police and fire protection and even shared in the purchase of a new fire truck during the term of the agreement. So as you can see from these few examples, the tax relief provided in 1996 has resulted in an ongoing win-win partnership for the airport tenants and the community. The current bill introduced that will change the tax status is of great concern to everybody at the airport. The recent economic downturn, as you can all imagine, has severely impacted the aviation industry. Traffic at our airport year over year has declined over 30%. It's resulted for our company in a staff reduction of 15%. change in our tax status now will have a devastating impact on the businesses at Holman Field and force us to make difficult decisions regarding our future. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, our tenants have made considerable capital investments at Holman Field. We've honored our agreement. We survived 176 days and millions in lost revenue due to floods. We struggled through the effects of 9/11, and now we struggle to survive in a very difficult economic climate. Our position is that the current tax policy is necessary for the survival of our airport and businesses and has clearly been beneficial for the city schools and the surrounding community. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other testimony for or against? Any other testimony for or against House File 393? Any questions, any further comments from anyone here? Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the author of the bill, I see Representative Mariani is a co-author of the bill. Is this the same bill that he had last year?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
And last year when we heard this bill, there was the discussion was a little different. We're in different economic times. And it was a lot of it revolved around the success of this partnership that you have going on. And I did ask the question, I thought that it was very important for people to understand, is what is the primary cargo or usage of a Holman Field Airport?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is not an airline category airport, it is a general aviation airport, so private and corporate aircraft use the airport along with, we have many medical flights flying in organs, patients. We also support the Minnesota State Patrol Aviation Department and then also military aircraft.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes, do the other airports, I know Anoka County Airport is near the area that I represent, or at least in my metro area, do they get the same treatment, tax treatment that Holman Field does?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they do not. However, and I'm certainly not an expert in the area of how airports are taxed or benefited, they do not have the same exemption. However, the county has provided bonding and certain other provisions that have benefited that particular airport. Again, I'm not an expert. I don't know if maybe Mitch Killian from MAC, if he is here.
Okay.
If you'd allow him
someone
to.
Someone here that could answer that question?
I think I can answer it.
So, Mr. Diamond, we'll give you a shot.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich. There's a reliever airport for the MAC, and all of them pay property taxes. This is the only exemption to the property taxes. One of the things that is confusing, what was stated earlier, is that, well, geez, they're just getting the same exemption from city and school district taxes that the main international airport is. That's a little confusing, misrepresentative. The reason why the MAC does not pay school district or city property taxes is it is not in a school district or it is not in a city. It is federal property. It's part of the old fort, and so it never was part of a governmental unit, and that is why there is that difference there. But of all the airports that the reliever airports that have actual school districts and are within municipal boundaries and receive municipal services, all the other ones do pay the taxes. So that the MFP is a unique situation, unlike the other ones. That answers your question.
Thank you.
If I could just follow up with a question. This is broader than the city of St. Paul, and it does impact many of the districts. And that is the reason why I think Representative Johnson and other St. Paul legislators should really be commended, because it's not just that the city of St. Paul benefits from this. Actually, the benefit, as was stated by Ms. Underwood, is relatively small financially. It's really a fairness issue. Actually, where the real financial benefit comes is to the state and to other communities in the metropolitan area. Because the reason why that small incremental benefit to other property taxpayers in St. Paul is, there would be a benefit. It would lower taxes for other businesses which are impacted by the economy, homeowners which are impacted by the economy. But the reason why those aren't as impacted as you might think they were with this loss of taxes from this airport and the commercial properties is because the way the tax system works is when those are pulled off the revenue, St. Paul loses some of that. But actually what does is St. Paul pulls the taxes from the rest of you. Other districts, then your businesses at the airport in Anoka pay their property taxes, but then they pay an incrementally higher tax to cover up for the taxes that are not paid there, whether it's fiscal or the state tax system. So there's a shift, and that shift is about roughly $400,000 annually to the state and the other communities that are having to pick up the tab, increases their taxes to those people who, again, who are suffering under the same economic situation. So really it is a case of fairness in providing equity. None of us want to pay more taxes than we have to. But on the other hand, is the belief of many that we should all equally pay, which helps spread the burden out and make sure that we can provide the needed services in these tough economic times. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else here to testify for or against? Please proceed.
Mr. Killian with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. I just thought I could comment to Representative Dietrich's question regarding Anoka specifically, but I can take it a little bit broader on a statewide basis as well and then bring it down into Anoka. When you look at general aviation or airports in general around the state of Minnesota, you're going to find completely different structures at each one you look at. Cities and counties own the airports. Some might charge the local property tax. In some cases, you're going to have a city or a county that will actually build a facility and give them free rent in a facility or a free fuel farm, which are very expensive to build. And so there's different subsidies or agreements and leases around the state that you'd find if you're trying to compare apples to apples. And this property tax is also one that you'd have to really look at close to see how things are applied, city and county taxes, and what's going on depending on their rent structure. And unless you get the full picture of each airport, you're not getting the full picture of each airport. You're really only getting a little snapshot, and that's what we're doing here when we're comparing Anoka. Taking this down into Anoka specifically, yes, the city and school district at Anoka County Airport do collect property taxes off of that airport that the tenants at St. Paul don't pay. But if you look closer at the Anoka County Airport, one specific example there, and a big one that I can give you is, recently the county came in and helped to bond for over $20 million of construction on that airport. Runway improvements, building area improvements, that they're going to in return get some revenue for and help to pay off those bonds. But they have come in and recognized the importance of that airport that the tenants on that airport are benefiting from. So if you're really going to start to compare them, you really got to kind of go across the board, and this is only a piece of it. Our board hasn't taken a position on this bill, but we want to make sure that everybody recognizes the importance of rates and charges to all of our tenants on the airport. And the biggest and easy example I can give you is when you look at the airline rates and charges structure, Southwest was coming here because of the market base, but it was also important for us to have low-cost airport operations for them. They compare that around the country. And so although we're not talking about Southwest here, the same is true when we look at our corporate tenants, and that we want to keep an overall, all the costs accumulative to them to operate on this airport to be low, because they do have alternatives. And in this case, Richmond, Wisconsin is not too far away, and these tenants do have an alternative, depending on the size of the airplane that they have, to go to places like Richmond, Wisconsin. So we're constantly looking at our rates and charges structure, and we hope the state does too.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Anyone else? If not, Representative Johnson, closing words?
I just want to confirm the fact that the City of St. Paul, the legislators of St. Paul, the vast majority, all of them, for as far as I know, support the bill that is before you. We're strong supporters of Holman Field. We built a flood wall for Holman Field over the last couple of years, multi-$1 million, $48 million flood wall with the help from the state and the feds and the city.
So it's certainly a strong support of the flood law. The main message to keep in mind is it's an issue of basic fairness. This is an exemption that's been in existence for 10 years, whereby they don't have to pay the taxes that all other commercial properties do. It's time for that to end, and it's time for them to be partners in the issues before the state, just like everybody else. And Rex and Lanning will have some information from the city council, I think, within the next day or two that I can provide you that I think will show their position on this matter, and I think that'll help clarify it as well. And that's it,
okay. Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. Well, we didn't have a quorum when Representative Conan made his first motion, so that didn't count. So you need to, Representative Conan moves to lay over House File 393 for possible inclusion into a division report. So do I need to vote on that? Okay, we don't have to vote. So thank you very much.
Thank you for letting me have
it. Representative Johnson.
Thank you.
Next, we have House File 27, Representative Broad. And do we hear someone who would like to move House File 27? Representative Lanning moves House File 27. Welcome to the division, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This is actually a bill that the chairman, in his wisdom, included as part of the property tax division report, and then Madam Chair, in her wisdom, included as part of the tax committee bill last year. And unfortunately, the Senate was not as wise, and I don't believe agreed to it in the conference committee report. But for the members who were not around, what this bill does is it essentially provides for a phase-in of market value increases for homes that were affected in natural disasters. Many of us represent areas that were impacted by a natural disaster of one way, say, of one type or another. And while there's a lot of assistance and focus up front when those natural disasters occur, there's all sorts of things that come behind. And one of the things that we found in talking to the folks who were impacted by a tornado in my area is that they had to rebuild, but with the rebuild came property taxes that they weren't planning on and couldn't afford. And so, Mr. Chairman, what this is trying to do is recognize that they have all sorts of costs, they have all sorts of challenges after rebuilding their homes. Let's just phase in their new market values to give them a shot and give them a chance to keep up with the increased costs that are upon them through the improvements in their homes. Many of these folks don't want to improve their homes. Many of, in terms of the disaster, many of these folks would have preferred to have their old home. But they ended up having to rebuild, and this is just a way to soften the blow for the folks who were impacted in a negative way. Mr. Chairman, I was just made aware of a couple of technical challenges with the bill that I'd be happy to work with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Hines also has been speaking with them. It's more technical related to definitional changes and things like that related to disaster areas. With that, that's the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Broad, and thank you for bringing this forward again this year. It makes a lot of sense and will help alleviate some of the pain that people have on this. I know last year, I think when we put this in the property tax division report, we actually put a size limitation on it, like 130% of the original size, so someone couldn't totally redo and make a mansion. And so, would you have a problem with that if we did something like that again?
No.
Just limit that down.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think I recall the specific discussion we had that led to that, and I'm more than happy to have that language move forward as well. I just started with the original, but if it's your preference, I can have you lay it on the table. I can bring back that as an amendment, or you can just take care of it in your report if you prefer.
What might be the best way? Last year we ended up putting like 130%. Is that correct? I think we put a limit on that. Mr. Hines, thought we had some sort of a limit on that.
Mr. Chair, I believe we did, but I don't recall what it was. You can certainly look that up.
I'm just wondering if we should amend that today rather than, it's a little more transparent if we can do that today. I'm almost sure it was 130%. Staff,
Mr. Chair, I might also suggest that, as Representative Broad alluded to in some conversations I've had with the department, there's a couple other minor things they'd like to clean up as well. So that might speak to delaying it and trying to take care of a few matters at once, perhaps. But those are minor matters, and this is maybe more substantive.
Why don't we do that? I mean, would it be improper if we brought this bill back and just added the amendments without the author having to be here, if that would be okay? I mean, we could certainly notify you. I mean, but I don't know if we would have to go through the rigmarole. But maybe you want to be here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a trust in your efforts on my bill, and if you prefer I'm not here, no problem.
I mean, we could make the change as we do the division report if it was included, but I'd like to keep that as much out in the open as we possibly can.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to come back.
What we will do is we will put it on the agenda again, and it would be for 2 minutes at best, and if we do that. So, any comments from members here?
Mr. Chairman, I am aware of somebody who does want to testify in opposition. I just want to make sure that they have that chance.
All right, thank you. All right, anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 27? I think we have a member from the assessors group.
Although, Mr. Chairman, I don't know how anybody can testify against my bill, but I'm hoping to learn.
Representative Broad, I can't imagine, but we may hear.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Stephen Baker. I'm the Ramsey County Assessor, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. I sit on the Legislative Committee and on the Executive Board of that group. And I should say my county board has not taken a position on the bill yet. And in response to Representative Broad's question about how could anybody possibly take a position against it, assessors are well known for kind of taking positions that aren't necessarily popular at the outset. So I guess what I'd like to say is that NAO cannot support the bill because, in our view, it violates two of the basic precepts of good property tax policy. And those are the principle that ad valorem taxation should be based on market value, that market value is accountable and justifiable, typically with sales of similar properties. And therefore, we believe that adjustments to market value, such as limitations on assessors' estimated market value, create inequities between taxpayers and lessen transparency. We also generally oppose tax treatment, tax policy that treats that does not treat all taxpayers in a consistent manner, and oppose classifications or special programs that target only a small number of taxpayers. However, but to sympathize with the group of citizens that Representative Broad's bill is trying to assist, we would suggest that perhaps the legislature reconsider existing mechanisms to help the folks that are envisioned to be helped with this bill. And we would suggest that you could consider some of the disaster credits and abatements that are currently in law in 273.1231 through 273-1235, and perhaps expand on some of those in a way to provide the additional relief that's sought here. And I guess in terms of if it is felt that, and it seems like from the discussion I heard that the bill may proceed forward, our suggestion would be if the bill does go forward, we could consider, we would prefer to have more of a 2 assessment years rather than an 18-month period. It might be easier to administer. And the $5,000 limit seems pretty low to us. You start to phase in a $5,000 limit, you're really talking about a $15 tax difference per year on the 3 years that you're phasing it in. So perhaps a higher threshold would be better. And we think that the terminology $5,000 loss in assessed or change in assessed value might be better than $5,000 in damage, because sometimes you can have damage or repairs without having a change in assessed value. So we might, so if we do some of the other technical changes, we might consider that. And that's all I had.
I appreciate those suggestions very much, and it sounds like we're going to do a little more work on the bill, so, and it will come back. But anything else? Representative Broad, your last. Anyone else care to testify for again? If not, Representative Broad, any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Whenever you prefer to get it back on the agenda, I'd be happy to come along, and I will also talk with the assessors to see. I think actually a couple of the changes make some sense. We'll bring back something that you can add into your division report in perfect form.
Thank you very much. Representative Lanning renews his motion on House File 27 to lay it over for possible inclusion into the division report. So, thank you very much. We now have House File 151, Representative Mahoney. And do we have anyone who would care to move it? Representative Mateski moves House File 151, and we looks like we have an amendment at the desk. Would you like to get that in proper form so we can go from there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Someone would move that for me, please.
Representative Mateski moves the A1 amendment, and any discussion on that? If not, we'll vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, the amendment is adopted. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 151 is a very, very complex and tough bill to go through. Not like those just a simple little bill. Last year, President Solberg and I don't know why I'm carrying a fix to Mr. Representative Solberg's bill. Passed a bill that exempted apprenticeship training facilities from property taxes. And the Department of Revenue said we weren't clear enough, so they charged for the land underneath the training facilities. The intent last year was to exempt the building and the land. The amendment deals with changing from one half acres to 5 acres. The reason I changed this from a half acre to 5 acres was going through some of the apprenticeship programs in phone calls. 1 acre allows you to put a 20 square foot building up. Most facilities are in the 100,000 square foot facilities. And I'll use the one that I spent way too many nights in. We had about 6 or 7 classrooms, 2 shop areas, and the office for the coordinator. Well over the 20,000 square foot. The problem also would ensue that you'd be taxing for a parking lot for these kids to come and park their vehicles there while they go to school. So members, that is the bill. I have a half a dozen apprenticeship organizations here in the audience. I told them in the sense of time, I'll bring it forward, and if there's any questions, they certainly can come down.
Thank you. I think this was part of the tax bill in 07. That was
vetoed 07?
Towards the end, and then it was put in last year in 08, but not including the land, just the building. And I think that's where we're sitting right now. So, any comments? Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, typically these facilities are owned by what kind of legal entity? Is it a private nonprofit, a for-profit?
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, there's a variety. None of them are for-profit. None that I have contacted are for-profit. These are nonprofits, and I think there's a nonprofit trust owns a couple of them. So, to my knowledge, they are some form of a nonprofit, and the exact title of the 2 or 3 that I've heard, nonprofit and nonprofit trust are the 2 that I heard of. Now, if there are others out there that I'm unaware of, a private apprenticeship training facility, none have come forward to talk to me at all about this bill.
Mr. Chair, if I might, do we have an inventory as to how many of these facilities there may be statewide at all?
Representative Mahoney?
In the phone calls, in the tracking that I did, no, I don't have a complete inventory. I could certainly provide that information to the committee or at least call Minsky and see if they have any and put an email out to some of them, but I don't really have it.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Lanning,
one last question if I might have asked. In terms of precedence for this kind of exemption, what other types of facilities are granted this type of an exemption?
Anyone care to answer? Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, I'm not sure exactly how to answer that. I think that the argument that was given for this exemption is that it is a type of school or educational facility, and that it should be granted a property tax exemption more on that basis. One thing that does concern a little bit that I think we'll have to work on is if we do include land, some of these facilities, or at least I thought when we talked about this last year, that you'll notice in the language it says all or a portion of the building that's used, because it isn't always the entire structure. And if in fact we're exempting land, and especially up to 5 acres, it gets to be a little bit tricky as to do we say then the portion of the land that also is proportional to the structure, or, you know, that becomes a little bit more of an issue. So I think that's something that we'll have to address if the committee chooses to have a property exemption for land.
Also, thank you, Ms. Baker. The revenue estimate says here, at the time, 20 to 30 buildings were thought to be involved with the change that was made. And here it says it was exempted by the 07 legislature, so maybe it passed.
It was 07. We didn't have an 07 bill.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, right, that's what I'm thinking. It said 08. Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's 08. All right. So it is 08, yeah. Okay. So it sounds like maybe 20 to 30 buildings were thought to be involved. Representative Lanny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember a similar discussion on child care, nonprofit child care facilities, and I'm not sure as to what the latest is on that. I know that was still under discussion and review, and I guess as we consider this, I think we need to look at the context of other exemptions that are or are not granted here and how consistent we're being. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other Representative Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney. My question is, I know these are probably scattered all over the state, but removing the property taxes from these entities is going to spread it to other tax-paying entities in the area, and I'm just wondering if you have any idea, excuse me, of what the cost to those other people would be, those other entities.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, no, I don't have a cost of what that might spread out to other particular taxpayers in the state. You listen to the previous bill. I don't have that number either. the one two before that bill, I guess it was Representative Johnson's bill.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. Just to follow up to that, is it possible to get a list of these properties and their locations so we can kind of get a determination of something like that?
That would be a great idea. I think we can try to, maybe Revenue or somebody could try to provide that. Very good. We will make note of that and try to get that.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Mahoney.
Just so the committee understands that many of these are located on Minsky facilities, so that they are, some of them already are underneath this particular auspice and others. And one of the reasons there were a number of different requests for that acreage to change, and I made sure that it stayed much smaller than people were suggesting, because I thought it was appropriate that we keep these things within a certain size. I mean, you don't want to have 10 or 15 or 25 or 85 acres. I don't think that's appropriate for training. So I'm more than willing to work with the committee or speak with the chair as the show moves through. And you've got a while to go, and I can find out some other information for you if you care and share it with the committee.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone like to testify for or against? I know there's several here that would testify for, but I don't know if they need that. You're certainly welcome to. If not, any closing comments there, Representative Mahoney?
It's a good bill. Hope it gets through.
Very good. Representative Lincheski renews her motion to lay over House File 151 as amended for possible inclusion in the revision report. So thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Chris.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question. I have a habit of going out and trying to read the bills the night beforehand, and this might have been my mistake. Well, first of all, before I say that, I want to thank the committee legislative assistant for his great job in the minutes today and for correcting the minutes from the previous meeting, because I even got a personalized note on the minutes stating that asking if it was okay if my name was spelled right. I just want to say thank you very much, that I appreciated that. I have a habit of going out, Mr. Chairman, and trying to read the bills the night beforehand. And last night I was not able to access the revenue notes on the bills that were up today, and I'm wondering, it's possible I might have been doing something wrong, but I was not able to see them. Is there any...
Thank you. Great question, Representative Rappel. Michelle, can you answer that?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we do our best to circulate the revenue estimates beforehand, but it's all a timing factor with the Department of Revenue, and I, as much as I can even... What I do when I do this summary is try to make sure it's as complete as possible. But if you would want to see something in the works that might not be fully complete, I could do that to let you know what I have at least a day or two beforehand. But I can tell you right now I had two in and two not in as of Monday afternoon. So this sheet in particular would have been half empty.
Okay. Well, that's a great point. At least the night before. I mean, if they possibly could, and I don't know how that timing works out. I don't know if there's someone from revenue that would care to weigh in on this one. So, I don't know if that, I mean, who...
And, Mr. Chairman...
Yes?
It's not that big of a deal. It's just that, you know, these are pretty simple bills, but as we get farther
Absolutely.
On in the process, and we're under more time constraints, you know, sometimes we can... We have to be able to learn whenever we can learn, and I am new to the committee, so it took me a couple of minutes to figure out. I was trying to figure out why there was a property tax increase for the airport one, and I thought about it for a couple of minutes, and I was able to figure it out. But
Well, and if you're Representative Chester.
Well, Mr. Chair, so people who may be newer to the committee know that the responsibility for them relies with the department, so it's not House, and it's Mike Michelle was trying to defend them, but it is not Ms. Schill's responsibility to get them to us in time. It's not House Fiscal or House Research. It's the Department of Revenue. So I think the chair was looking for an answer, but really it is Commissioner Ines's staff who needs to get them to the committees. And they do, I think, do a good job of putting them out there when they get them, but it's really not Ms. Schill's. Sure. She doesn't create them. They come from the Department of Revenue.
And Mr. Chairman,
thank you, Representative Winchesky, for that. Representative Garofalo.
And my apologies, I'm not trying to delay the committee's work. So when the revenue notes show up, the House website, are we linking back to the Department of Revenue, or do we get an electronic copy of it and then House staff have to post it up here?
Great question. Where is that up on the website? Ms. Schill, do you know how that works?
The department is responsible, Mr. Chair and members. The department is responsible for having them available electronically. And then I think what we do is we get a link on the committee website. But sometimes, especially as we go through the process, those revenue estimates they're trying to meet deadlines for committees in both the House and Senate. And so they have difficulty posting them, in addition to getting them where they need to be to satisfy their charge. So we can take the question back and ask, but I've got a feeling that that's what the response would be, is that, you know, they're doing the best they can.
You're bringing up a great point. So if we want to see those, and we go to the Department of Revenue website, we would find those. Is there a certain point we could go to? Is there anyone that could potentially answer that? Well, we don't need that right now, but if we could get that answer, in fact, for the next meeting, if we could get the website link and get that out to everyone on where we can get any of the revenue notes that are posted up to that point, and great. That's a learning process for all of us here. So. Thank you. We're going to move to the last and final bill, House File 136. Representative Conan. And Representative Conan, do you want to move House File 136?
Mr. Chairman, I move for possible inclusion in the division report, House File 136.
Very good. Please proceed.
Okay. Statute authorizes two or more political subdivisions to create emergency medical services special taxing districts which have levy authority. Recently, sunsets have been extended at least a couple of times in the last few years, and what this bill does is eliminate the sunset date, which is now set for the taxes levied in 2011 and 2012. And Mr. Chairman, I have with me today Mr. Doyle, who will talk a little bit more in depth about the bill.
Mr. Doyle.
Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. My name for the record is O.J. Doyle. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. I really don't have much more to say than what our author did in a time of excuse me, tight budgets, difficult reimbursement issues, and increased bad debt. We just need to have means of raising revenue to maintain our emergency medical services delivery system. As you can see, I worked with Ms. Baker a little bit on this. There's only a handful of these special taxi districts that have been established, and the reason is because of the sunset just a couple of years down the road. And it's a very popular concept with smaller communities. They don't want to hire a law firm and go through the whole rigmarole of establishing a taxing district, raising the revenue, becoming dependent on it, and then it expires. And so we just wanted to get the sunset taken away, excuse me. And we feel that then this tool will be utilized. They had two phone calls this morning before coming down here on this issue. Same thing, is this bill going to pass and we're going to pursue it? If it doesn't, then they're going to hold off.
Thank you. Mr. Doyle, you mentioned a handful of special districts like this existing. Where are they located primarily?
Hopefully, Ms. Baker can bail me out on that. We don't collect that information, our association. I know Floodwood, I believe, Fertile, and I'm not sure beyond that.
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, actually, I put a call into revenue to ask them if in statute there's a provision that says on or before March 15, 2005 and March 15, 2007, these special taxing districts are supposed to submit their levy and expenditure reports to the Commissioner of Revenue. And I don't know if they've ever done that. There's only a couple of these that are listed in the special or in the abstract of tax list, but maybe I see Mr. Nord is here from the department. Maybe he can tell us whether or not these reports have been filed, and it might be a good idea at some point for us to make an amendment to keep these going every couple of years if, in fact, the legislature wants to kind of keep track of how many that there actually are of these. Because this is just this was put in there when these were first coming into being, is why this language is so time specific with the 2005 and 2007 dates.
Mr. Nord, before you answer that question, how are cities and that doing who are supposed to have their levy reports in to collect all of their LGA? How are they doing right now?
Mr. Chair, Jason Nord from the yes. Department of Revenue. As of yesterday afternoon, we were waiting for 50 cities and 10 counties to send in their property tax levy reports, and we're up to speed entering the ones we've received, but we're still waiting for those to come in.
And the deadline is what time next month?
The deadline was December 30th of last year.
Exactly. Well, you know, it brings up a great point. There's a lot of things in state law and I'm not blaming the Department of Revenue, but, you know, these things are, these cities and that, they don't get this in, they're going to lose an extra percent of their local government aid, so it's no small thing. And, I'm glad you're out there reminding folks, but I think it sends a good message out to our local units of government that, you know, these laws are made for a reason, and we've got to check that. And I presume the associations and that are sending out calendars. I know you get the township publication once a month, and they've got everything, you know, elections, boom, 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 that they have to do, and I appreciate your work in getting them, but there's still 50 to 60 to go on that.
Right, Mr. Chairman, we did send out emails for all the emails that we had to all the jurisdictions and followed it up with mail letters as well, threatening that if they didn't have it in by this Friday, the prospect of aid cuts would be looming. So hopefully by Friday we have 100% of the reports in, and we will get them to you as quickly as possible.
Mr. Nord, I know the state auditor, if like the fire and pension stuff doesn't come in, legislators who have those like fire
districts will get a notice of some sort. We'll get a copy that we'll send out to the mayor or something. Do you do that at all? Could you, would there be any way to notify or at least send out what cities are currently not in compliance with that, so as legislators, I presume it's public record, I mean that as legislators we could call the mayor or call the city administrator and say, hey, this is, or isn't that something that...
Mr. Chair, that's something I could go back and put together a list perhaps and send it to you if you'd like to share that with committee members or representatives to assist with that process, but we can get on them hard and heavy here this afternoon and tomorrow and make sure we get them in. But you know, it's harder for us when it comes to reporting by cities because we don't typically have a lot of data reporting from cities. We do have a lot of data reporting from the counties, and for the most part, the counties do the best they can, but we frequently have problems getting reports in on time and are constantly trying to harass them and don't often have any consequence to failure to turn in the report. So this is actually one where there is a consequence in the statute, although that consequence is in need of some revision. There's actually maybe I shouldn't make this advertise this too much, but the aid cut penalty for not turning in this report for counties actually refers to a chapter that doesn't have any aids in it. So it's kind of a...
Well, you know, and I know these cities know that we have a huge budget deficit and looking for every little dollar we can get, so they better get those reports back in. But on the question referring to the special districts, Mr. Nade.
Sure. Mr. Chair, we were asked the question a while ago as to whether any of these reports have come in from the emergency medical services districts, and I don't think there's an obvious recipient at the Department of Revenue, so it's possible that these showed up in our mailroom and no one knew who to route the reports to. But I can say we did not find any of the reports and have not, so we have not seen or read any of those reports from the Emergency Medical Services District. And it's, I didn't come prepared to tell you how many districts there are, but I believe in our code list we only have two or three codes that have been established. There is sometimes a lot of confusion as to what a special taxing district is versus what a special service district is versus what a subordinate service district is, because they are different things. And so we only assign codes to special taxing districts, and we treat special taxing districts separately than we treat things like special service districts or subordinate service districts. So it could be that there are more out there and they are not being administered exactly correctly, but as far as we're aware, I could go back and check the code books. I believe there's only maybe three that I'm aware of. So.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Isn't it important for us, if we're going to determine policy on these special districts, to know how many are out there and maybe we need a better mechanism for making sure that we do know what districts are out there. It sounds like we don't have good information about that. And staff, Ms. Baker, do you have any observations about that question?
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, no, I guess I don't on the actual reporting. One thing about this bill, though, that I think there might be a misunderstanding, or else, you know, I'm reading it wrong, is that the sunset date is strictly for establishing these. And once they're established, they can levy forever. So by the legislature having a sunset date on these, I think the reason the sunset date was put on originally was for the exact reason that Representative Lanning brought up, and that is that we want to know what they're doing, how much they're levying, what purpose they're serving, where they're located, which is why the reports were put in there. And the sunsets were considered as a way to kind of get them to come back and make sure that we heard from them. But I don't think that unless we need to make it more clear that this sunset date is for establishing them, I think Mr. Doyle mentioned something about they're afraid they won't be able to levy in the future, and I don't think that's an issue at all, or at least that's not how I read the language here. But it does, the sunset is for establishing them, so.
Representative Lanning, that's an excellent point, and I think if we do a lot of this, we will need to get that. So before anything would happen on that, we will get that information. And I guess, you know, it looks like the sunset was for about 10 years down the road from the time this was initially set up. And I know Representative Cohen's bill is to totally eliminate that, but, you know, I mean, maybe there's another option is to put another sunset on there and extend it potentially, and that's another option.
Representative Lanning, if I might follow up, I certainly would support taking the sunset off if we had a way of keeping track of what's out there and what's being done. If we don't have a good way of doing that, then the sunset serves that purpose, it seems to me.
Good. Any other comments? Anyone else would care to testify for or against this bill? And Mr. Nord, I have a comment from one of the leading city organizations that they have personally called the X amount that still have those heavy things standing. So you're getting help on this also. So.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I believe the League of Cities has done a lot to try and prompt cities to get the reporting in. We certainly appreciate that.
Very good. All right, Representative Cornyn, any last words?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, and I think Representative Lanning and staff makes a good point that we should probably work on the reporting things part of this, but other than that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Also, Representative Cohen and maybe staff, does the cap remain at $400,000 per special district as a cap for the levy? Mr. Gorham? So we're not changing that.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. No, I didn't mean to cause problems here with the bill. We're dealing. If I might just add, we're dealing on these taxing districts with very small rural voluntary ambulance services and small communities, and they may have all been lost in the mail, the reports. But I think that it may be just not an understanding of. What's involved in our association is to get the sunset removed. We're starting to look at a number of these things. We're willing to commit the resources to track these and help with Department of Revenue or staff, whatever you would want to do to address your concerns.
Okay, thank you. And again, here on the revenue estimate, back to Representative Garofalo on this, it says there are currently 4 emergency medical service taxing districts with a combined levy of about $250,000. So that's anyway.
Mr.
All right,
Chair.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's been 2 years, but I remember seeing a report of special districts that included at least 1 or 2 medical services. So I will do my due diligence and look up those records as well, see if I can get more information for you.
Very good. Representative Cohen is going to renew his motion to lay over file 136 for possible inclusion into the division report. Thank you very much, Representative. A couple of things. We have minutes to approve. Do I hear a motion to approve of the February 4th, 09 minutes? Representative Scott?
Move to approve.
Very good. Any discussion on that? If not, we have a motion to approve the February 4th, 2009 minutes. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion carried. A couple of announcements that I have. The next meeting is actually for the division next Wednesday at 10:30 a.m., taking the regular tax committee time because at 1 p.m. is a joint hearing of Health and Human Services. Representative the chair is shaking her head. There's a joint meeting of maintenance of effort. So it will have the property tax division, tax committee, health and human services, and?
Finance, yeah.
and finance and policy, this is going to be, don't miss that one. That is going to be committees on steroids that day. It's going to be huge.
We're going to be on the House floor for that.
Yeah, we'll probably move to the chambers on that. Then the last thing, you know, Representative Lanning and I have been meeting at least every couple of weeks, and we came up with another good idea today, actually, when we did this. And on February 24th, which is the day that we have the Bloomington hearing, I believe, we have been told that the division could have that. Well, we're on our work group, we're really running into kind of crunch time, and so what we're going to do is on February 24th, from 10:30 to noon, there'll be a chance for all the work groups to get together. So that will be a meeting time, because we're going to have to start getting bills produced, so that will work out really well, and I think that's even better than having a division report. We can kind of have that, because things are getting so busy right now, to find an hour, hour and a half is really getting tough. That's going to work out beautiful, so thank you, Madam Chair, for all of that. Any other comments before we adjourn? If not, we are adjourned.
All right, we're going to call this meeting to order at 1 o'clock.
Property tax and local sales tax division to order, and we don't have a quorum yet, so we're not going to approve any minutes, but our first House file is House File 393. Representative Johnson, if you would come forward and present your bill. And Representative Conan is going to move that House File 393 be laid over and for possible inclusion into the division report. So with that, Representative Johnson, Representative Mariani carried this bill last year, if I'm not correct, or one very identical.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. They figured they'd pick up the pace this year a little bit.
Very good. So kind of sending them the 18 this year to finish things up. All right. So, Representative Johnson, good to have you here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, committee. The purpose of House File 393, which is before you, is to reattach Holman Field and that St. Paul's downtown airport to the city and school district's tax base, as well as have businesses at Holman Field contribute to the fiscal disparities pool and state general taxes. These businesses at Holman Field have enjoyed property tax exemption since 1996, whereby they pay no property taxes to the city of St. Paul, St. Paul School District fiscal disparities or state general taxes. And for 2009, those exemptions added up to around $676,000. Now, the main reason for this bill, quite frankly, is tax fairness. Tax fairness. Currently, the businesses make yearly payments to the city of police and fire, and in the year 2007, that amounts to around $63,000, which, of course, is far short of their property tax responsibilities. So you compare the $676,000 with $63,000, you see the difference. So, in short, Mr. Chair and committee, especially given our current severe budget woes and as a matter of fairness and equity, it's time to end this preferential treatment and include these businesses as equal partners in supporting our city, school district, and state. This should not be seen as a punitive measure by any means, but more, again, as a matter of fairness. And I will add, Mr. Chair, that I read through extensive minutes of the city council meeting for the city of St. Paul when this matter was first presented back in 1995. And although the city supported this detachment by resolution in 95, they also included a sunset date of December 31st, 1998, which I think clearly presumes that this was a time-limited exemption. So that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair. I have with me, should any questions arise, Mr. Tom Diamond. He's a citizen activist who's pursued and followed this important issue.
Thank you very much, Representative. Did Mr. Diamond, did you have some testimony? Just answer questions. I guess answer. Okay. One question I would have for Representative Johnson is, since 1996, what has changed? I mean, you know, initially this was set up in 1996. What has changed that would say, hey, we should do away with this from 96?
I think the origin of, and clearly what it states in the
The information as provided to the City Council at the time was to spur economic development, greater use of home and field, and to have the same tax liability as Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport to provide an economic advantage for the city, home and field businesses. I mean, I would argue that home and field during that time frame has enjoyed the benefits of this exemption, and enough time has expired between now and then to say that the time for the exemption has expired, that they've enjoyed the benefits of that exemption over this time frame. And that, again, as I referred to earlier, the whole notion of this exemption had a time limit initially from the city anyway, so it fits with what the intent was.
All right, do you have anyone else here with you, Representative Johnson?
I do not.
Okay. Is there anyone here from the City of St. Paul or the St. Paul School District that would care to testify for or against or anything? With, we heard numbers here that what they're paying in lieu of police and that, about $63,000, and the actual property taxes would be about $676,000.
That's that correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So anyone from, okay, all right, so if Mr. Diamond, if you would step down and...
Hi, Mr. Chair and members, I'm Wendy Underwood with the City of St. Paul, and I just want to let members know the city currently does not have a position on this bill. It has been discussed before the City Council's Legislative Ad Hoc Committee, and was passed without recommendation. A formal resolution in support of Representative Johnson's bill is on the City Council agenda, but has not been passed. The mayor is on record saying that the timing of removal of this exemption is very poor for our businesses, and the city itself does face a cash loss if this law were to pass. We currently receive a payment in lieu of tax from the tenants at Home and Field for police and fire services. It's proportional to our overall property tax. In 2009, the tenants are to pay the city their payment in lieu of tax of just over $72,000. And so we're very concerned about losing that direct cash payment to the city during this economic time. So, and all of that, questions about that are being discussed at City Hall.
Ms. Underwood, when you talk about the City of St. Paul actually losing, okay, if in lieu of the $72,000, what would that be bringing in property taxes? I mean, it sounds like that was much higher than that, so I guess I...
The property tax estimate, and if you and I have the same most recent chart, would be just under $100,000 to the city for 2009. Our concern is that we currently receive a cash payment from the tenants for their pilot payment, and by that $100,000 roughly going on the city levy, mm-hmm. For us to recapture that, if you will, as cash, we would have to raise the levy. So, and we're concerned about the direct impact to our current 2009 budget, which is short and likely going to be even greater problem by the summer.
Ms. Senator, what I'm not quite following on the property tax. If the property taxes would bring in, you know, at the same rate you're currently levying in the city, would bring in, you know, roughly $100,000, I still don't see $100,000 versus $72,000. Looks like you'd still get more in property taxes than what you're getting in lieu of taxes. Explain that a little further. I'm losing you somewhere there.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I... Right, and I may be doing a poor job explaining it. But the concern we have is that by the additional $100,000 going on the property tax levy, which is a benefit to our residents of about a dollar as far as what they pay in property tax, it's very nominal as opposed to the cash the city directly receives from the tenants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you would actually, the center would be spreading out $100,000
that people would pay less. I still see the residents would save a little bit, potentially. But hey, maybe that's... Any other comments or questions?
Yes.
I'm hearing from Ms. Dalton that the levy limits would play into some of this, where you could not levy extra, at least for it. So that would make a difference there. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton.
So, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly understand Representative Johnson bringing this forward on behalf of his constituents. We heard this in committee before last year, and you know, my feeling is that unless we've got a clear position of the city, either for or against this, I find it very difficult for us as a state to kind of get in the middle of what I think should be a local issue. And as I understand, Ms. Underwood, this is on the agenda for the city to give further consideration. And Mr. Chairman, I don't think we should weigh in on this until such time as we have a clear indication from the city as to what their position is.
Thank you. Anyone, Representative Johnson, did you want to respond to anything so far? Otherwise, I'm going to ask, thank you, Ms. Underwood, very much. And is there here anyone else that would care to testify for or against House File 393? Please come forward. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Clint Coomer. I'm the general manager for Signature Flight Support at the St. Paul Downtown Airport. Our company coordinates and provides various ground support services to business and general aviation aircraft that are based in St. Paul or that fly in from around the country to do business in our city. In addition, our company provides services 24 hours a day for military, medical, and emergency response aircraft. I'm speaking today on behalf of the tenants and employees of the St. Paul Downtown Airport to voice our concern over the potential legislation changing the tax status for the businesses at our airport. As you know, Senator Pappas and Representative Mariani originally authored the bill that provided us the tax exemption in 1996 with support of the Mayor, School District, and the Port Authority. At the time, the St. Paul Airport was underutilized and struggling, and it was imperative to try and make it an economically viable enterprise that would create jobs, promote growth in the community, and relieve some of the congestion problems that face the International Airport. The intent of the tax relief was to level the playing field at the International Airport, as they were already and continue to be detached from city and school district taxes, which created a competitive advantage for them when trying to attract business to our airport. In exchange for the exemption, the St. Paul tenants agreed to make annual payments to the city for police and fire protection, as already mentioned, increase the total market value of the airport by at least 20% within 5 years, and work with local students to provide mentoring and promote careers in aviation. The Act contained a blink-off provision whereby the exemption would expire in 5 years if the tenants did not reach the agreed-upon 20% market value outlined in the Legislative Act. 13 years later, the 1996 legislation has been and continues to be a resounding success. Currently, there are over 300 people employed at the airport. The local area has enjoyed a substantial impact on business activities, including car rental companies, local restaurants, taxi limo services, and hotels. People utilizing the airport provide a boost to the local economy. It's estimated that the economic benefit of the airport to the surrounding community has grown to over $112 million annually. That's based on a 2005 study. In regards to the total market value of the airport property, we experienced a 200% increase in value as of 2001, and a total increase of $21 million in value since 1996. The investment Home and Field tenants have made has caused the market value to far exceed the objective of the original agreement. The tenants in St. Paul have also clearly met the commitments to promote education and mentoring. Over the years, Signature has formed a partnership with Farnsworth Aerospace, an aviation-focused elementary school on St. Paul's east side. We provide tours, donate money, books, and pilot supplies. Farnsworth has been successful, so successful that they've expanded their program recently. In addition, we donated computer equipment to Concordia Creative Learning Academy,
And I've recently volunteered to serve on the Aviation Programs Advisory Board at Embry Hills Community College. We've also been involved in Aviation Career Education Camp, a joint venture with the FAA, MnDOT, and several local aviation companies to provide week-long summer camps for high school students to introduce them to various aviation-related careers, science, math, and technology. In addition, we work with St. Paul Connections and the public schools to ensure that economically disadvantaged students are allowed the opportunity to participate at a reduced rate or, in many cases, free of charge due to donations made by the St. Paul tenants. We have, of course, kept our commitment to pay annually for police and fire protection and even shared in the purchase of a new fire truck during the term of the agreement. So as you can see from these examples, the tax relief provided in 1996 has resulted in an ongoing win-win partnership for the airport tenants and the community. The current bill introduced that will change the tax status is of great concern to everybody at the airport. The recent economic downturn, as you can all imagine, has severely impacted the aviation industry. Traffic at our airport year over year has declined over 30%. It's resulted for our company in a staff reduction of 15%. Changing our tax status now will have a devastating impact on the businesses at Holman Field and force us to make difficult decisions regarding our future. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, our tenants have made considerable capital investments at Holman Field. We've honored the agreement. We survived 176 days and millions in lost revenue due to floods. We struggled through the effects of 9/11, and now we struggle to survive in a very difficult economic climate. Our position is that the current tax policy is necessary for the survival of our airport and businesses and has clearly been beneficial for the city schools and the surrounding community. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other testimony for or against? Any other testimony for or against House File 393? Any questions, any further comments from anyone here? Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the author of the bill, I see Representative Mariani is a co-author of the bill. Is this the same bill that he had last year?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
And last year when we heard this bill, there was, the discussion was a little different. We're in different economic times, and it was a lot of it revolved around the success of this partnership that you have going on. And I did ask the question, I thought that it was very important for people to understand, what is the primary cargo or usage of a Holman Field Airport?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is not an airline category airport, it is a general aviation airport, so private and corporate aircraft use the airport, along with we have many medical flights flying in organs, patients. We also support the Minnesota State Patrol Aviation Department, and then also military aircraft.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes. Do the other airports, I know Anoka County Airport is near the area that I represent, or at least in my metro area, do they get the same treatment, tax treatment that Holman Field does?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they do not. However, and I'm certainly not an expert in the area of how airports are taxed or benefited of, they do not have the same exemption. However, the county has provided bonding and certain other provisions that have benefited that particular airport. Again, I'm not an expert. I don't know if maybe Mitch Killian from MAC, if he is here.
Okay.
If you allow him
someone
to.
Someone here that could answer that question?
I think I can answer it.
So, Mr. Diamond, we'll give you a shot.
Sure. Representative Dietrich. There's the Reed River Airport for the MAC, and all of them pay property taxes. This is the only exemption to the property taxes. One of the things that was confusing with it, was stated earlier, is that, well, geez, they're just getting the same exemption from city and school district taxes that the main international airport is. That's a little confusing, Representative. The reason why the MAC does not pay school district or city property taxes is it is not in a school district or it is not in a city. It is federal property. It's part of the old fort, and so it never was part of a governmental unit, and that is why there is that difference there. But of all the airports that the reliever airports that have actual school districts and are within municipal boundaries and receive municipal services, all the other ones do pay the taxes. So that the MSP is a unique situation, unlike the other ones. That answers your question.
Thank you.
If I could just follow up with a question. This is broader than the city of St. Paul, and it does impact many of the districts. And that is the reason why, Representative Johnson and other St. Paul legislators should really be commended, because it's not just that the city of St. Paul benefits from this. Actually, the benefit, as was stated in his underwood, is relatively small financially. It's really a fairness issue. Actually, where the real financial benefit comes is to the state and to other communities in the metropolitan area. Because the reason why that small incremental benefit to other property taxpayers in St. Paul is, there would be a benefit. It would lower taxes for other businesses which are impacted by the economy, homeowners which are impacted by the economy. But the reason why those aren't as impacted as you might think they were with this loss of taxes from this airport and the commercial properties is because the way the tax system works is when those are pulled off the revenue, St. Paul loses some of that. But actually what does is St. Paul pulls the taxes from the rest of you. Other districts then, your businesses at the airport in Anoka pay their property taxes, but then they pay an incrementally higher tax to cover up for the taxes that are not paid there, whether it's fiscal deferreds or the state tax system. So there's a shift, and that shift is about roughly $400,000 annually to the state and the other communities that are having to pick up the tab, increases their taxes to those people who, again, who are suffering under those same economic situations. So really it is a case of fairness in providing equity. None of us want to pay more taxes than we have to. But on the other hand, is the belief of many that we should all equally pay, which helps spread the burden out and make sure that we can provide the needed services in these tough economic times. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else here to testify for or against? Please proceed.
Mitch Kelly with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. I just thought I should comment to Representative Dietrich's question regarding Anoka specifically, but I can take it a little bit broader on a statewide basis as well and then bring it down into Anoka. When you look at general aviation or airports in general around the state of Minnesota, you're going to find completely different structures at each one you look at. Cities and counties own the airports. Some might charge the local property tax. In some cases, you're going to have a city or a county that will actually build a facility and give them free rent in a facility or a free fuel farm, which are very expensive to build. And so there's different subsidies or agreements and leases around the state that you'd find if you're trying to compare apples to apples. And this property tax is also one that you'd have to really look at close to see how things are applied, city and county taxes and what's going on depending on their rent structure. And unless you get the full picture of each airport, you're not getting the full picture of each airport. You're really only getting a little snapshot, and that's what we're doing here when we're comparing Anoka. Taking this down into Anoka specifically, yes, the city and school district at Anoka County Airport do collect property taxes off of that airport that the tenants at St. Paul don't pay. But if you look closer at the Anoka County Airport, one specific example and a big one that I can give you is recently the county came in and helped to bond for over $20 million of construction on that airport. Runway improvements, building area improvements, that they're going to in return get some revenue for and help to pay off those bonds. But they have come in and recognized the importance of that airport that the tenants on that airport are benefiting from. So if you're really going to start to compare them, you really got to kind of go across the board, and this is only a piece of it. our board hasn't taken a position on this bill, but we want to make sure that everybody recognizes the importance of rates and charges to all of our tenants on the airport. And the biggest and easy example I can give you is when you look at the airline rates and charges structure, Southwest is coming here because of the market base, but it was also important for us to have low-cost airport operations for them. They compare that around the country. And so although we're not talking about Southwest here, the same is true when we look at our corporate tenants, and that we want to keep an overall, all the costs accumulative to them to operate on this airport to be low, because they do have alternatives. And in this case, Richmond, Wisconsin is not too far away, and these tenants do have an alternative, depending on the size of the airplane that they have, to go to places like Richmond, Wisconsin. So we're constantly looking at our rates and charges structure, and we hope the state does too.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Anyone else? Matt, Representative Johnson, closing words?
I just want to confirm the fact that the City of St. Paul, the legislators of St. Paul, the vast majority of all of them, for as far as I know, support the bill that is before you. We're strong supporters of Holman Field. We built a flood wall for Holman Field over the last couple of years, multi-million dollars, $48 million flood wall with the help from the state and the feds and the city. So we're certainly a strong supporter of the flood wall. The main message to keep in mind is it's an issue of basic fairness. This is an exemption that's been in existence for 10 years, whereby they don't have to pay the taxes that all other commercial properties do. It's time for that to end, and time for them to be partners in the issues before the state, just like everybody else. And Representative Lanning will have some information from the City Council, I think, within the next day or two that I can provide you that I think will show their position on this matter, and I think that'll help clarify it as well. And that's it,
Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. Well, we didn't have a quorum when Representative Conan made his first motion, so that didn't count. So you need to, Representative Conan moves to lay over House File 393 for possible inclusion into a division report. So do I need to vote on that? Okay, we don't have to vote. So thank you very much.
Thank you for letting me have it,
Representative Johnson.
Thank you.
Next, we have House File 27, Representative Broad. And do we hear someone who would like to move House File 27? Representative Lanning moves House File 27. Welcome to the division, Representative Roth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This is actually a bill that the chairman, in his wisdom, included as part of the property tax division report, and then Madam Chair, in her wisdom, included as part of the tax committee bill last year. And unfortunately, the Senate was not as wise, and I don't believe agreed to it in the conference committee report. But for the members who were not around, what this bill does is it essentially provides for a phase-in of market value increases for homes that were affected in natural disasters. Many of us represent areas that were impacted by a natural disaster of one way, say, of one type or another. And while there's a lot of assistance and focus up front when those natural disasters occur, there's all sorts of things that come behind. And one of the things that we found in talking to the folks who were impacted by a tornado in my area is that they had to rebuild, but with the rebuild came property taxes that they weren't planning on and couldn't afford. And so, Mr. Chairman, what this is trying to do is recognize that they have all sorts of costs, they have all sorts of challenges after rebuilding their homes. Let's just phase in their new market values to give them a shot and give them a chance to keep up with the increased costs that that are upon them through the improvements in their homes. Many of these folks don't want to improve their homes. Many of, in terms of the disaster, many of these folks would have preferred to have their old home, but they ended up having to rebuild, and this is just a way to soften the blow for the folks who were impacted in a negative way. Mr. Chairman, I was just made aware of a couple of technical challenges with the bill that I'd be happy to work with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Hines also has been speaking with them. It's more technical related to definitional changes and things like that related to disaster areas. With that, that's the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Broad, and thank you for bringing this forward again this year. It makes a lot of sense and will help alleviate some of the pain that people have
on this. I know last year, I think when we put this in the property tax division report, we actually put a size limitation on it, like 130% of the original size, so someone couldn't totally redo and make a mansion. And so, would you have a problem with that if there was, if we did something like that again, just to limit that down?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think I recall the specific discussion we had that led to that, and I'm more than happy to have that language move forward as well. I just started with the original bill, but if it's your preference, I can have you lay it on the table. I can bring back that as an amendment, or you can just take care of it in your report if you prefer.
What might be the best way? Last year in the we ended up putting like 130%. Is that correct? I think we put a limit on that. Mr. Hines, did we? I thought we had some sort of a limit on that.
Mr. Chair, I believe we did, but I don't recall what it was. We can certainly look that up. And
I'm just wondering if we should amend that today rather than, it's a little more transparent if we can do that today. I'm almost sure it was 130%. Staff,
Mr. Chair, I might also suggest that, as Representative Broad alluded to in some conversations I've had with the department, there's a couple other minor things they'd like to clean up as well, so that might speak to delaying it and trying to take care of a few matters at once, perhaps. But those are minor matters, and this is maybe more substantive.
Why don't we do that? Would it be improper if we brought this bill back and just added the amendments without the author having to be here, if that wouldn't be okay? I mean, we could certainly notify you. But I don't know if we would have to go through the rigmarole. Or maybe you want to be here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a trust in your efforts on my bill, and if you prefer I'm not here, no problem.
we could make the change as we do the division report if it was included, but I'd like to keep that as much out in the open as we possibly can.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to come back.
What we will do is we will put it on the agenda again, and it would be for 2 minutes at best, and if we do that. So, any comments from members here?
Mr. Chairman, I am aware of somebody who does want to testify in opposition. I just want to make sure that they have that chance.
All right, thank you. All right, anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 27? I think we have a member from the assessors group.
Although, Mr. Chairman, I don't know how anybody can testify against my bill, but I'm hoping to learn.
Representative Broad, I can't imagine, but we may hear. Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Stephen Baker. I'm the Ramsey County Assessor, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. I sit on the legislative committee and on the executive board of that group, and I should say my county board has not taken a position on the bill yet. And in response to Representative Brock's question about how could anybody possibly take a position against it, assessors are well known for kind of taking positions that aren't necessarily popular at the outset. So I guess what I'd like to say is that MAO cannot support the bill because, in our view, it violates two of the basic precepts of good property tax policy. And those are the principle that ad valorem taxation should be based on market value, that market value is accountable and justifiable, typically with sales of similar properties. And therefore, we believe that adjustments to market value, such as limitations on assessors' estimated market value, create inequities between taxpayers and lessen transparency. We also generally oppose tax treatment, tax policy that does not treat all taxpayers in a consistent manner, and oppose classifications or special programs that target only a small number of taxpayers. However, but to sympathize with the group of citizens that Representative Rod's bill is trying to assist, we would suggest that perhaps the legislature reconsider existing mechanisms to help the folks that are envisioned to be helped with this bill. And we would suggest that you could consider some of the disaster credits and abatements that are currently in law in 273.1231 through 273-1235, and perhaps expand on some of those in a way to provide the additional relief that's sought here. And I guess in terms of if it is felt that, and it seems like from the discussion I heard that the bill may proceed forward, our suggestion would be if the bill does go forward, we could consider, we would prefer to have more of a 2 assessment years rather than an 18-month period. It might be easier to administer.
And the $5,000 limit seems pretty low to us. You start to phase in a $5,000 limit, you're really talking about like a $15 tax difference per year on the 3 years that you're phasing it in. So perhaps a higher threshold would be better. And we think that the terminology, $5,000 loss in assessed or change in assessed value might be better than $5,000 in damage. Because sometimes you can have damage or repairs without having a change in assessed value. So as we do some of the other technical changes, we might consider that. And that's all I had.
I appreciate those suggestions very much, and it sounds like, you know, we're going to do a little more work on the bill, so, and it will come back. But anything else? Representative Broad, your last. Anyone else care to testify for again? If not, Representative Broad, any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Whenever you prefer to get it back on the agenda, I'd be happy to come along, and I will also talk with the assessors. I think actually a couple of the changes make some sense. We'll bring back something that you can add into your division report in perfect form.
Thank you very much. Representative Lanning renews his motion on House File 27 to lay it over for possible inclusion into the division report. So thank you very much. We now have House File 151, Representative Mahoney. And do we have anyone who's scared to move it? Representative Lachesky moves House File 151, and we looks like we have an amendment at the desk. Would you like to get that in proper form so we can go from there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If someone would move that for me, please.
Representative Lachesky moves the A1 amendment, and any discussion on that? If not, we'll vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, the amendment is adopted. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 151 is a very, very complex and tough bill to go through. Not like those, just a simple little bill. Last year, Representative Solberg, and I don't know why I'm carrying the fix to Representative Solberg's bill, passed a bill that exempted apprenticeship training facilities from property taxes, and the Department of Revenue said we weren't clear enough, so they charged for the land underneath the training facilities. The intent last year was to exempt the building and the land. The amendment deals with changing from one half acres to 5 acres. The reason I changed it from a half acre to 5 acres was going through some of the apprenticeship programs in phone calls. 1 acre allows you to put a 20 square foot building up. Most facilities are in the 100,000 square foot facilities. And I'll use the one that I spent way too many nights in. We had about 6 or 7 classrooms, 2 shop areas, and the office for the coordinator, well over the 20,000 square foot. The problem also would ensue that you'd be taxing for parking lot, for a parking lot, for these kids to come and park their vehicles there while they go to school. So members, that is the bill. I have a half a dozen apprenticeship organizations here in the audience. I told them in the sense of time, I'll bring it forward, and if there's any questions, they certainly can come down.
Thank you. I think this was part of the tax bill in 07 that was
vetoed
towards the end, and then it was put in last year in 08, but not including the land, just the building. And I think that's where we're sitting right now. So, any comments? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, typically these facilities are owned by what kind of legal entity? Is it a private nonprofit, a for-profit?
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning. There's a variety. None of them are for-profit. None that I have contacted are for-profit. These are nonprofits, and I think there's a nonprofit trust owns a couple of them. So, to my knowledge, they are some form of a nonprofit, and the exact title of the 2 or 3 that I've heard,
nonprofit and nonprofit trusts are the two that I heard of. Now, if there are others out there that I'm unaware of, a private apprenticeship training facility, none have come forward to talk to me at all about this bill.
Mr. Chair, if I might, do we have an inventory as to how many of these facilities there may be statewide at all?
Representative Mahoney? In the phone calls, in the tracking that I did, no, I don't have a complete inventory. I could certainly provide that information to the committee or at least call Minsky and see if they have any and put an email out to some of them, but I don't really have it.
Mr. Chairman, one last question, if I might, of staff. In terms of precedence for this kind of exemption, what other types of facilities are granted this type of an exemption?
Anyone care to answer? Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, I'm not sure exactly how to answer that. I think that the argument that was given for this exemption is that it is a type of school or educational facility and that it should be granted a property tax exemption more on that basis. One thing that does concern a little bit that I think we'll have to work on is if we do include land, some of these facilities, or at least I thought when we talked about this last year, that you'll notice in the language it says all or a portion of the building that's used, because it isn't always the entire structure. And if in fact we're exempting land, and especially up to 5 acres, it gets to be a little bit tricky as to do we say then the portion of the land that also is proportional to the structure, or you know, that becomes a little bit more of an issue. So I think that's something that we'll have to address if the committee chooses to have a property exemption for land.
Also, thank you, Ms. Baker. The revenue estimate says here, at the time, 20 to 30 buildings were thought to be involved with the change that was made. And here it says it was exempted by the 07 legislature, so maybe it passed then.
It was. We didn't have an 07 bill.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, right, that's what I'm thinking. Said oh, okay. Yeah, so that's all right. So it is 08. Yeah. So okay. It sounds like maybe 20 to 30 buildings were thought to be involved. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember a similar discussion on childcare, nonprofit childcare facilities, and I'm not sure as to what the latest is on that. I know that was still under discussion and review, and. I guess as we consider this, I think we need to look at the context of other exemptions that are or are not granted here and how consistent we're being. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other Representative Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney. My question is, I know these are probably scattered all over the state, but removing the property taxes from these entities is going to spread it to other taxpaying entities in the area, and I'm just wondering if you have any idea, excuse me, of what the cost to those other people would be, those other entities.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, no, I don't have a cost of what that might spread out to other particular taxpayers in the state. In listening to the previous bill, I don't have that number either. the one two before that bill, I guess it was Representative Johnson's bill.
Representative Scott.
I think you just follow up to that. Is it possible to get a list of these properties and their locations so we can kind of get a determination of something like that?
I think that would be a great idea. I think we can try to, maybe Revenue or somebody could try to provide that. Very good. We will make note of that and try to get that.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Mahoney.
Just so the committee understands that many of these are located on Minsky facilities, so that they are, some of them already are underneath this particular auspice and others. And one of the reasons there were a number of different requests for that acreage to change, and I made sure that it stayed much smaller than people were suggesting, because I thought it was appropriate that we keep these things within a certain size. I mean, you don't want to have 10 or 15 or 25 or 85 acres. I don't think that's appropriate for training. So I'm more than willing to work with the committee or speak with the chair as the show moves through. And you've got a while to go, and I can find out some other information for you if you care and share it with the committee.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone like testify for or against? I know there's several here that would testify for, but I don't know if they need that. You're certainly welcome to. If not, any closing comments there, Representative Mahoney?
It's a good bill. Hope it gets through.
Very good. Representative Lincheski renews her motion to lay over House File 151 as amended for possible inclusion in the revision report. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question. I have a habit of going out and trying to read the bills the night beforehand, and this might have been my mistake. Well, first of all, before I say that, I want to thank the committee legislative assistant for his great job in the minutes today and for correcting the minutes from the previous meeting, because I even got a personalized note on the minutes stating that, asking if it was okay if my name was spelled right. I just want to say thank you very much, that I appreciated that. I have a habit of going out, Mr. Chairman, and trying to read the bills the night beforehand. And last night I was not able to access the revenue notes on the bills that were up today. And I'm wondering, it's possible I might have been doing something wrong, but I was not able to see them. Is there any?
Thank you. Great question, Representative Garofalo. Michelle, can you answer that?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we do our best to circulate the revenue estimates beforehand, but it's all a timing factor with the Department of Revenue. And I, as much as I can, what I do when I do this summary is try to make sure it's as complete as possible. But if you would want to see something in the works that might not be fully complete, I could do that to let you know what I have at least a day or two beforehand. But I can tell you right now I had two in and two not in as of Monday afternoon. So this sheet in particular would have been half empty.
Awesome. Well, that's a great point. At least the night before. I mean, if they possibly could, and I don't know how that timing works out. I don't know, is someone from revenue that would care to weigh in on this one? So, I don't know
It's not that big of a deal. So I just thought, these are pretty simple bills, but as we get farther
Absolutely.
On in the process, and we're under more time constraints, sometimes we have to be able to learn whenever we can learn, and I am new to the committee, so it took me a couple of minutes to figure out. I was trying to figure out why there was a property tax increase for the airport one, and I thought about it for a couple of minutes, and I was able to figure it out. But
Representative Winchester.
Well, Mr. Chair, just so people who may be newer to the committee know that the responsibility for them relies with the department. So it's not House, and it's nice Ms. Schill was trying to defend them, but it is not Ms. Schill's responsibility to get them to us in time. It's not House Fiscal or House Research. It's the Department of Revenue. So I think the chair was looking for an answer, but really it is Commissioner Ines's staff who needs to get them to the committees. And they do, I think, do a good job of putting them out there when they get them, but it's really not Ms. Schill's. Sure. She doesn't create them. They come from the Department of Revenue.
And Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Representative Lincheski, for that. Representative Garofalo.
And my apologies, I'm not trying to delay the committee's work.
Right.
So when the revenue notes show up, the House website, are we linking back to the Department of Revenue, or do we get an electronic copy of it and then House staff has to pull it up here?
Great question. Where is that up on the website? Ms. Schill, do you know how that works?
The department is responsible, Mr. Chair and members. The department is responsible for having them available electronically. And then I think what we do is we get a link on the committee website. But sometimes, especially as we go through the process, those revenue estimates they're trying to meet deadlines for committees in both the House and Senate. And so they have difficulty posting them in addition to getting them where they need to be to satisfy their charge. So we can take the question back and ask, but I've got a feeling that that's what the response would be, is that, they're doing the best they can.
You're bringing up a great point. So if we want to see those, and we go to the Department of Revenue website, we would find those. Is there a certain point we could go to? Is there anyone that could potentially answer that?
Well, we don't need that right now, but if we could get that answer, in fact, for the next meeting, if we could get the website link and get that out to everyone on where we can get any of the revenue notes that are posted up to that point, and great. That's a learning process for all of us here. So. Thank you. We're going to move to the last and final bill, House File 136. Representative Conan. And Representative Conan, do you want to move House File 136?
Mr. Chairman, I move, if possible, inclusion in the division of Courthouse File 136.
Very good. Please proceed.
Okay. Statute authorizes two or more political subdivisions to create emergency medical services special taxing districts which have levy authority. Recently, sunsets have been extended at least a couple of times in the last few years, and what this bill does is eliminate the sunset date, which is now set for the taxes levied in 2011 and 2012. And Mr. Chairman, I have with me today Mr. Doyle, who will talk a little bit more in depth about the bill.
Mr. Doyle. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. My name, for the record, is O.J. Doyle. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. I really don't have much more to say than what our author did in a time of tight budgets, difficult reimbursement issues, and increased bad debt. We just need to have means of raising revenue to maintain our emergency medical services delivery system. As you can see, I worked with Ms. Baker a little bit on this. There's only a handful of these special taxing districts that have been established, and the reason is because of the sunset just a couple of years down the road. And it's a very popular concept with smaller communities. They don't want to hire a law firm and go through the whole rigmarole of establishing a taxing district, raising the revenue, becoming dependent on it, and then it expires. And so we just wanted to get the sunset taken away, excuse me. And we feel that then this tool will be utilized. They had two phone calls this morning before coming down here on this issue. Same thing, is this bill going to pass and we're going to pursue it? If it doesn't, then they're going to hold off.
Thank you. Mr. Doyle, you mentioned a handful of special districts like this existing. Where are they located primarily?
Hopefully, Ms. Baker can bail me out on that. We don't collect that information, our association. I know Floodwood, I believe, Fertile, and I'm not sure beyond that.
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, actually, I put a call into revenue to ask them if in statute there's a provision that says on or before March 15, 2005 and March 15, 2007, these special taxing districts are supposed to submit their levy and expenditure reports to the Commissioner of Revenue. And I don't know if they've ever done that. There's only a couple of these that are listed in the special or in the abstract of tax list, but maybe I see Mr. Nord is here from the department. Maybe he can tell us whether or not these reports have been filed, and it might be a good idea at some point for us to make an amendment to keep these going every couple of years if, in fact, the legislature wants to kind of keep track of how many that there actually are of these. Because this is just this was put in there when these were first coming into being, is why this language is so time specific with the 2005 and 2007 dates.
Mr. Nord, before you answer that question, how are cities and that doing who are supposed to have their levy reports in to collect all of their LGA? How are they doing right now?
Mr. Chair, Jason Nord from the Department of Revenue. As of yesterday afternoon, we were waiting for 50 cities and 10 counties to send in their property tax levy reports, and we're up to speed entering the ones we've received, but we're still waiting for those to come in.
And the deadline is what time next month?
The deadline was December 30th of last year.
Exactly. Well, you know, it brings up a great point. There's a lot of things in state law and I'm not blaming the Department of Revenue, but, you know, these things are, these cities and that, they don't get this in, they're going to lose an X percent of their local government aid, so it's no small thing. And I mean, I'm glad you're out there reminding folks, but I think it sends a good message out to our local units of government that, you know, these laws are made for a reason, and we've got to check that. And I presume the associations and that are sending out calendars. I know you get the township publication once a month, and they've got everything, you know, elections, boom, 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 that they have to do. And I appreciate your work in getting them, but there's still 50 to 60 to go on that.
Right, Mr. Chairman. We did send out emails for all the emails that we had to all the jurisdictions and followed it up with mailed letters as well, threatening that if they didn't have it in by this Friday, the prospects of aid cuts would be looming. So hopefully by Friday we have 100% of the reports in, and we will get them to you as quickly as possible.
Mr. Nord, I know the state auditor, if like the fire and pension stuff doesn't come in, legislators who have those like fire districts will get a notice of some sort. We'll get a copy that was sent out to the mayor or something. Do you do that at all? Could you, would there be any way to notify or at least send out what cities are currently not in compliance with that, so as legislators, I presume it's public record. I mean, that legislators, we could call the mayor or call the city administrator and say, hey, this is the, or isn't that something that...
Mr. Chair, that's something I could go back and put together a list, perhaps, and send it to you if you'd like to share that with committee members or representatives to assist with that process. But we can get on them hard and heavy here this afternoon and tomorrow and make sure we get them in. But you know, it's harder for us when it comes to reporting by cities, because we don't typically have a lot of data reporting from cities. We do have a lot of data reporting from the counties, and for the most part, the counties do the best they can, but we frequently have problems getting reports in on time, and are constantly trying to harass them, and don't often have any consequence to failure to turn in the report. So this is actually one where there is a consequence in the statute, although that consequence is in need of some revision. There's actually maybe I shouldn't make this advertise this too much, but the aid cut penalty for not returning in this report for counties actually refers to a chapter that doesn't have any aids in it. So it's kind of a...
Well, you know, and I know these cities know that we have a huge budget deficit and looking for every little dollar we can get, so they better get those reports back in. But on the question referring to the special districts, Mr. Nord.
Sir, Mr. Chair, we were asked the question a while ago as to whether any of these reports have come in from the Emergency Medical Services Districts, and I don't think there's an obvious recipient at the Department of Revenue, so it's possible that these showed up in our mail room and no one knew who to route the reports to. But I can say we did not find any of the reports and have not, so we have not seen or read any of those reports from the Emergency Medical Services District. And if, I didn't come prepared to tell you how many districts there are, but I believe in our code list we only have two or three codes that have been established. There is sometimes a lot of confusion as to what a special taxing district is versus what a special service district is versus what a subordinate service district is, because they are different things. And so we only assign codes to special taxing districts, and we treat special taxing districts separately than we treat things like special service districts or subordinate service districts. So it could be that there are more out there and they are not being administered exactly correctly, but as far as we're aware, I could go back and check the code books. I believe there's only maybe three that I'm aware of. So.
Well, Very good. Thank you. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Isn't it important for us, if we're going to determine policy on these special districts, to know how many are out there, and maybe we need a better mechanism for making sure that we do know what districts are out there. It sounds like we don't have good information about that. And staff, Ms. Baker, do you have any observations about that question?
Ms. Baker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, no, I guess I don't on the actual reporting. One thing about this bill, though, that I think there might be a misunderstanding, or else, you know, I'm reading it wrong, is that the sunset date is strictly for establishing these. And once they're established, they can levy forever. So by the legislature having a sunset date on these, I think the reason the sunset date was put on originally was for the exact reason that Representative Lanning brought up, and that is that we want to know what they're doing, how much they're levying, what purpose they're serving, where they're located, which is why the reports were put in there. And the sunsets were considered as a way to kind of get them to come back and make sure that we heard from them. But I don't think that, unless we need to make it more clear that this sunset date is for establishing them, I think Mr. Doyle mentioned something about they're afraid they won't be able to levy in the future, and I don't think that's an issue at all, or at least that's not how I read the language here. But it does, the sunset is for establishing them, so.
Representative Lanning, that's an excellent point, and I think as we do a lot of this, we will need to get that. So before anything would happen on that, we will get that information. And I guess, you know, it looks like the sunset was for about 10 years down the road from the time this was initially set up, and I know Representative Conan's bill is to totally eliminate that, but, you know, I mean, maybe there's another option is to put another sunset on there and extend it potentially, and that's another option.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Lanning.
If I might follow up, I certainly would support taking the sunset off if we had a way of keeping track of what's out there and what's being done. If we don't have a good way of doing that, then the sunset serves that purpose, it seems to me.
Good. Any other comments? Anyone else would care to testify for or against this bill? And Mr. Nord, I have a comment from one of the leading city organizations that they have personally called the X amount that still have those levy things outstanding. So you're getting help on this also. So.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I believe the League of Cities has done a lot to try and prompt cities to get the reporting in, and we certainly appreciate that.
Very good. All right, Representative Conan, any last words?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, and I think Representative Lanning and staff makes a good point that we should probably work on the reporting things part of this, but other than that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Also, Representative Conan and maybe staff, does the cap remain at $400,000 per special district as a cap for the levy? Mr. Doyle? So we're not changing that.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. No, I didn't mean to cause problems here with the bill. We're dealing. If I might just add, we're dealing on these taxing districts with very small rural volunteer ambulance services and small communities, and they may have all been lost in the mail, the reports. But I think that it may be just not an understanding of what's involved in our association. If we get the sunset removal restraint, look at a number of these things, we're willing to commit the resources to track these and help with Department of Revenue or staff, whatever you would want to do to address your concerns.
Okay, thank you. And again, here on the revenue estimate, back to Representative Garoppolo, on this it says there are currently 4 emergency medical service taxing districts with a combined levy of about $250,000. So that's anyway. All right.
Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's been 2 years, but I remember seeing a report of special districts that included at least one or two medical services, so I will do my due diligence and look up those records as well, see if I can get more information for you.
Very good. Representative Cronin's going to renew his motion to lay over file 136 for possible inclusion into the division report. Thank you very much, Representative. A couple of things. We have minutes to approve. Do I hear a motion to approve of the February 4th, 09 minutes? Representative Scott?
Move to approve.
Very good. Any discussion on that? If not, we have a motion to approve the February 4th, 2009 minutes. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion carried. A couple announcements that I have. The next meeting is actually for the division next Wednesday at 10:30 a.m., taking the regular tax committee time, because at 1 p.m. is a joint hearing of Health and Human Services. Representative the chair is shaking her head. There's a joint meeting of maintenance of effort. So it will have the property tax division, tax committee, Health and Human Services, and? And finance and policy. This is going to be, don't miss that one. That is going to be committees on steroids that day. It's going to be huge.
We're going to be on the house floor for that.
Yeah, we'll meet if we're finally moving to the chambers on that. Then the last thing, you know, Representative Lanning and I have been meeting at least every couple of weeks, and we came up with another good idea today, actually, when we did this. And on February 24th, which is the day that we have the Bloomington hearing, I believe, we have been told the division could have that. Well, we're on our work group, we're really running into kind of crunch time, and so what we're going to do is on February 24th, from 10:30 to noon, there'll be a chance for all the work groups to get together. So that will be a meeting time, and because we're going to have to start getting bills produced, so that will work out really well, and I think that's even better than having a division report. We can kind of have that, because things are getting so busy right now, to find an hour, hour and a half is really getting tough. That's going to work out beautiful. So thank you, Madam Chair, for all of that. Any other comments before we adjourn? If not, we are adjourned.